Welcome to our final week in our summer teaching series called Waitlisted, where we've been thinking about what it means to wait and to wait and to wait. Just before Christmas, I lost my driving glasses. Now, I regularly misplace things, and the Lord is used to me asking Him to help me find whatever is lost in the moment. And 9 times out of 10, that item is found again fairly quickly. So when I asked Him to help me find my glasses, I wasn't surprised that I sensed I would. Only I didn't. I looked in all the obvious places, and I looked in a fair number of non-obvious places as well. But despite sensing that I was going to find these glasses, I didn't. Now, thankfully, the last time I had my eyes tested, my optician had said I didn't need glasses to drive legally, so it wasn't a crisis, but it bugged me. Through January and February, I looked, and I couldn't find them. Easter came and Easter went. And while we were on holiday last month, I thought, when I get back, I'm going to have to get myself a new pair. I'd given up waiting to find them. They were clearly lost. And then I went searching for a pair of sandals in a crate in the bottom of my wardrobe. Now, I'd gone through that crate earlier in the year, but as I rummaged around, lo and behold, there were my driving glasses. I must have put them in a jacket pocket, and unbeknown to me, they'd fallen out. Found a mere 8 months after they went missing. Found after I'd got tired of waiting to find them. Found after I'd given up the search. Now, giving up looking for something which can be replaced is one thing. But what about when we're waiting for something far more significant? What when we've been holding on to a promise for years, when the waiting has become so heavy and burdensome that we have become tired? Tired of carrying it alone, tired of waiting, tired of feeling betrayed or abandoned or let down, tired of asking questions or trying to work out why. So tired that we just want to give up. Paul is going to share a story of that kind of waiting.
While I was at university, I made God a promise. I didn't fully know what I was going to do with my life after I'd finished studying, but I promised God that I would take a year out after I finished university and that I would work for Him for a year. And at the time, I didn't know what that was going to look like, but it ended up being me going and working as an intern in the church that I'd been a part of as a student while I was in Manchester studying. And during the course of that year, it started to become clear to me that this wasn't really a year out. More and more, it started to feel like a year in, doing what I really should be doing what I'd been made to do, was how it felt. And by the end of that year, I felt convinced that God was calling me to work in the church, in youth work, in children's work, in a lot of the things that I'm still doing now. And so at the end of that year, I extended it for a second year, and I carried on working as an intern and taking on some other roles and responsibilities within the church as well. And during that second year, the senior minister and one of the other ministers sat me down and said, "We want to create a youth worker job as a full-time paid job within this church." Now, they didn't quite say, "We're going to give that job to you," but I very definitely walked out of that meeting feeling certain that that was what they meant, and that at the end of 2 years as a volunteer, I was going to be given a paid job. At the end of 2 years, the senior minister came to me and said, "We're not quite ready to create that job yet. Why don't you go and do something else for a while and then we'll talk?" And so I did. I went into computer programming. And it took me a while to find the job, and I didn't really want to do it because I wanted to be working in the church, but what else could I do? And I waited. And a year later, I was still waiting for them to create that job. 2 years later, 3 years later. After 4 years, they created a full-time youth worker job. And they gave it to somebody else. I applied, but they gave it to somebody who I had been the team leader for a couple of years. And so it was hard. And at that point, I was still waiting to see what God really wanted to do with my life. I was still doing a job that I didn't think I was called to and still didn't really know how to go about doing what I did feel I was called to. It took 3 more years before God told me to go to Bible college to train. And so another 3 years after that before I first started to do the kind of job that I had thought God was speaking to me about 10 years previously. Looking back, I can see why I needed to wait. At the time, it was frustrating. I was very, very grumpy with some of the people involved, and it was really painful, if I'm honest. But God made me wait.
Thank you, Paul. That's a powerful story, and I wonder whether you can identify with that. It can be such a struggle to keep going. Maybe we've tried really hard, but nothing seems to change. Maybe we've made wise choices, but the people around us just don't seem to support us. Maybe our family or our work life is a mess, and it just doesn't seem to be getting any better. Especially when we feel alone, unsupported, or even abandoned by others, it's not always easy to keep on waiting. And all too often, we become tempted to give up hope. Today we're going to look at the story of Joseph because he understands this. Joseph's story begins when he's 17 years old. He was his dad's favourite son, and it was pretty obvious. Jacob loved his son so much that he gave him special treatment, including the gift of a rather special coat. And you can imagine how awkward that made things between Joseph and his brothers. To make things more awkward, God began speaking to Joseph in his dreams, letting Joseph know that one day he would rule the nation and rule over his brothers. And instead of keeping this information to himself, Joseph told them. And then this made things really awkward. Instead of taking the hint that his brothers just didn't appreciate being told that Joseph would one day be their boss, Joseph continued to tell his brothers about these visions from God, and this made the relationship between the boys really, really tense. When Joseph's brothers had finally had enough of hearing Joseph talk about his own awesomeness, they decided to get rid of him. Gwen's going to tell us some of this story from Genesis 37.
The reading is from Genesis Chapter 37, starting at verse 12. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are, grazing their flocks?" "They have moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brother pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt.
So the good news was that instead of killing him, which was plan A, they opted for plan B. He was sold into slavery instead. But let's just pause for a moment and imagine what Joseph was experiencing when he realized how much his own family hated him. Imagine what he was feeling while he waited in that well. Imagine his fear when he realized he was going to be thrown into a foreign country where he knew no one. Imagine how overwhelming it would have been traveling in that caravan, not knowing where he would end up or how he would be treated where he got, wherever he was going to be. That was enough uncertainty and loneliness to make most people give up hope. But that wasn't the end of his misfortunes. When Joseph got to Egypt, God gave him loads of incredible opportunities. He ended up with a top-notch job working for one of Pharaoh's high-ranking officials. And Joseph was extremely good at what he did. Things were looking up. But then his boss's wife took a liking to him. When Joseph pointed out she was married, she accused him of making inappropriate advances towards her, and Joseph ended up in prison. Let's imagine again what he was experiencing there. Life was so hopeful, and then it wasn't again. And he hadn't even done anything wrong. What must it have been like to have been preyed on by powerful people? To have no one to turn to? When he was abandoned by people he thought were his allies? To be thrown into prison unjustly? Again, enough to cause most of us to give up hope. What would you do if you'd faced something similar? If you have faced anything like this, what did you do? Did you give up? Did you punch someone? Did you trust God? Maybe if you've not been through that, you have no idea. And even this isn't the end of Joseph's misfortunes. He lived in that prison for years, forgotten by Pharaoh and his own family, until he finally had a chance to be freed. One of the inmates was let out, and Joseph asked him to put in a good word for him. But the released inmate forgot, and Joseph was left to wait once again. Now, this story has a happy ending, but we're not going to look at that today, because today, what we're talking about and what we're thinking about is when we're sitting in the dark, waiting for help, looking for hope, and we're uncertain about our future. When Joseph was in this position, he had every reason to give up and lose hope, but he didn't. Even though everything seemed to be going wrong, even though Joseph wasn't sure if he'd ever make it out of prison, let alone whether God would fulfill that promise of making Joseph the ruler of a nation, Joseph knew that God was still with him. Joseph knew that while he was waiting, God had a plan. God was faithful. God was listening. In all that time, God never gave up on Joseph. So Joseph never gave up on God. And if you're waiting on God right now, can I encourage you not to give up, because God's not giving up on you either. So practically, what does God want us to do when we are waiting? I just want to give you five ideas that can help us hold on to hope when we feel hopeless. Five ideas that we can hold on to God with when we feel like we're alone. The first thing is to talk to God and keep on talking because God is listening. The second thing is to talk to others. You know, Joseph might have been abandoned and alone, but even if it feels like it, we're not, because that's what church family is here for. It's why we offer prayer at the end of our services. It's why we have a pastoral care team. It's one of the joys of being a minister and the privilege of being part of a community. There are always people around that we can talk to. The third thing is to remember that God is stronger than we might think. When Joseph was in that well, he could never have guessed the opportunities God was going to give him in Egypt. When he was in prison, he could have never known what God had in store for him in his future. When Joseph was betrayed by his brothers, he could never have anticipated the way God would one day restore their relationship. God did all these things and more. That's the same God who is telling you right now not to give up. God is stronger than you think. The fourth thing is to remember that you are stronger than you might think you are. You are made in the image of God. You're wonderfully created by a creator who designed you on purpose. You're strong, you're capable, and you're resilient. And when your strength fails, and sometimes it will, remember that in your weakness, God will be strong on your behalf. And so the fifth thing is to choose hope. You know, hope isn't just something that happens to us. It's something we can choose. We can choose hope when we fill our minds with what is good and true. We can choose hope when we choose to talk about our struggles rather than trying to handle them alone. We choose hope when we tell God how much we need help. We choose hope when we decide not to give up, no matter what. So no matter how different our situations are right now, we can all do something to choose hope, to trust, and to persevere. So let's spend a moment or two quietly reflecting on those things that we're waiting for. And maybe to help us, as we think about the passage of time, watch the grains of sand go through this timer slowly. What are you waiting for? And how are you going to not give up? Will you talk to God? Will you talk to someone you trust? Will you remind yourself of God's strength? Will you remind yourself of your strength? Will you choose hope? Let's pray together. Over the last few weeks, we've thought about Abraham and Sarah, who reminds us that God has a plan, but we might have to wait for it. We've thought about Paul and Silas, who remind us that while we're waiting, God is faithful. We've thought about David, who reminds us that while we're waiting, God is listening. And today, Joseph reminds us that while we're waiting, we can't give up because God's not giving up on us. Lord, help us to keep on waiting and to keep on waiting well, waiting for your plans to come to pass, remembering you're faithful, knowing you're listening, and remembering that you've promised never to give up on us. Lord, would you give us faith? Would you give us trust? Would you give us hope? Would you give us a resilient perseverance that helps us push on through so that when we come to the end of our waiting, we end well? Quicken our spirits to know that no matter what we're waiting for, we can keep on going because you're not finished with us yet. Amen.